Hi, hello, and welcome to Shanghai Expat Podcast or Shanghai Expat radio, your station, and your information, because it's all happening in Shanghai first. You're about to listen to an interview with the Dutch entrepreneur, Mr. Mark van der Guys. He is a Dutch entrepreneur and CEO of Spil Group Asia, and what Spil Group Asia stands for, what it is, and maybe even what it can do for you, is what you're going to hear from Mr. Mark van der Guys himself. I hope you enjoyed this interview, and I would also like to take the opportunity to tell you that maybe some variety of podcasts are coming up in the future, maybe even including some lectures about Shanghai or China, which are, of course, all in the public domain. So keep on listening to Shanghai Expat Podcast. All right, please go ahead.
All right. My name is Mark van der Guys. I'm 34 years old, originally from Holland. And I've been in China for over 7 years. My background is I'm an economist. Studied economics, business economics, in Maastricht, in the Netherlands. Right after university, which I finished in 95, I left Holland to go to Germany, work for Mercedes-Benz in their headquarters, which I did for about 7 years in total. Started as a so-called international management trainee, did some projects overseas. It was in Jakarta for a while. And actually, while doing a project in Jakarta, I really had the feeling, wow, Asia is cool, and you know, I wanna live in Asia later on.
Not really.
So that's how my idea of living in Asia started. After working for them for a couple of years, at the end of '99, I got the opportunity to become financial controller of Mercedes of Daimler Chrysler China. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was still called Daimler Chrysler Northeast Asia. Which was the company in charge of China, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Macau. And I applied for that job internally and got the job. And so in '99 I moved to Beijing. Had a great time there working for a multinational because I was still very young. I was 27 when I came there. Had a big house, nice car, and you know, the typical expat package, which is at that age very nice. But then after doing the job for about 3 years, I felt, you know, money is very nice, but I wasn't really that happy in the job itself. It was like, you know, making presentations all the time and doing the accounting stuff. I didn't see myself doing that for a longer time. So then I had a discussion with the CEO and discussed with him about, you know, what's going to be the next step. And that could either be go back to headquarters in a different position or do the same thing for another 3 years in China. And because I like China a lot, I decided then to stay in China, but I didn't want to do the same job, of course. So I decided, okay, I'm gonna quit the job. So I quit my job and started studying Chinese in Beihai. Beijing Foreign Studies University. And my idea was already before I quit my job, I had seen many opportunities in China. I saw many business opportunities, which I couldn't do while working at Daimler Chrysler because of my contract. So it was not just quitting my job to stay in China, but also to basically finally be able to do the things I really wanted to do, and that's, you know, run my own company, do things in my own way. I felt there were a lot of opportunities I could succeed in. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I started studying Chinese. My idea was first study Chinese for a year and then, you know, get going in the real business. Mm. The only issue was that after about 4 weeks of studying, I figured that, you know, at that time I was 30 years old. Being 30 years old with classmates of 19 or 20 years old is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. They live in a different world. They have different interests. For them, everything is new, and I've been in China for a few years already, so I was really living in a different life than they did. So I said, okay, you know, just going to set up my business already next to my studies. And
was it full-time study?
It was full-time study, okay. Yes. Yeah, but full-time study means, you know, you go to class 4 hours in the day, in the morning, and then you study a couple of hours in the afternoon. But,
right.
You know, I've always been someone who works...
Busy bee.
Yeah, I always work like 12, at least 12 hours a day. That's so, for me, that was like, you know, like a part-time study almost.
Yeah.
So I set up my first company already after 4 weeks studying.
Mm.
And that company took off quite quickly, which meant I had to travel. And if you go to university in China, you have to go there every day. And if you, I mean, if you're sick or so, you have to come with a doctor's letter to show you're sick.
Yep.
But, you know, the first time I traveled, I told my teachers, I said, listen, I've got my own business and, you know, I have to travel. And they sort of agreed. But then the week after that, it happened again, and the week after that again. And then it was like, you know, you should focus on your study and, you know, you cannot do this. And I was like, well, you know, I'm probably one of the better students in the class. I study hard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, you know, I do this next to my studies. And they for them, it was difficult to understand that somebody would be able to set up a business next to studying. So that was a bit, it gave some friction. And then I decided, okay, I'll focus a bit more on my studies then until the end of the semester. And then after the semester was over, I decided to call it quits, which is, looking backwards, was not a good idea. I should have continued my studies.
No, really.
Because my Chinese level wasn't high. It wasn't at the level yet that it should have been. And probably after a year, it would have been at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years after that, it really deteriorated because I was not at the fluent level yet.
Right, I understand.
So that's a pity, but you know, business went very well, and so I focused completely on business. The original company was a company that many people who started a company in China set up as well. A company involved in trading,
mm-hmm.
and consultancy, helping people to you know, set up their own business here. If I look back at that time, I was still very green in a way, you know.
Mm.
I thought I was doing a good job, but I made a lot of mistakes. I didn't give the wrong advice, but I could have done things more efficiently. And also in trading, I learned things the hard way. Some things went horribly wrong.
Well, mistakes are the best lessons, right?
True. That's absolutely right. So, and that was good to learn it that way. I would do things differently now, of course. But that's, you know, it's more than 4 years down the road at this point, and I learned a lot. So then what happened is that my consultancy went more in the direction of media. I met a guy who's a good friend of mine now, who's a television producer, and at the time was involved in both television and TV commercials. Also a Dutch guy, Sierk Voyacek. He right now he lives in Beijing. He was living in Shanghai at the time. And we basically teamed up together early 2003. To start producing television commercials in China.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
No, really.
Completely different business from what I was doing. Yeah. And also TV programs, actually.
Uh-huh.
And we made in the summer of 2003 the first Chinese reality television show, which was a really new thing at that time. Right now, reality TV is also quite normal in China, I guess.
I don't know, but if you say so, yeah.
Yeah, it's... maybe it's not like in the US, I guess, where there's a lot of reality shows all the time, but there's more and more of it.
Mm.
But that time was really new, so we basically made a combination of like a Big Brother kind of show,
okay.
combined with game elements. We put 12 contestants on Hainan Island.
Nice place.
Very nice place. Yeah, but not if you work 18 hours a day, which we did there for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you made 12 episodes in 2 weeks, which is a little bit too much actually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you work with a camera crew that doesn't know anything about reality television shows, who have only done scripted shows.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a major difference, because a scripted show, the cameraman knows what he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
Reality show, he has to basically follow the contestants, and
right.
That's a bit difficult because the cameraman follows the contestants and the sound guy is walking in the wrong direction, and we should have filmed that, actually. It was probably even more fun.
Right.
Anyway, we managed, and we did a lot more stuff, and it was really nice, really interesting. At the same time, I was still continuing my consultancy business, and my original company sort of merged into another Chinese company called China Bay, which is still existing,
right,
where I'm still a partner in actually as well.
Okay.
So that was basically, you know, like one, two years after I quit my job. I was involved both in media and in consultancy. And then during the summer of 2004, podcasting was somehow invented or was starting actually. I mean,
it's in China, you mean, or in
general? In general.
Because, you know, I heard of like Adam Curry, who's originally also from Holland.
Correct.
Famous for his MTV presentation or hosting the top 50 show US chart.
Correct.
Started. Yeah, you know, he's considered to be the pod father.
Yeah. Actually, I was following his weblog at that time, and I was following his ideas of developing a let's call it an RSS feed kind of way of getting enclosures into your computer and later on directly to your MP3 player, your iPod. So-called iPodder, iPodder software he was developing.
Yeah.
I found it very interesting, and I was following him, and then I thought, well, you know, it's kind of cool what he's doing. At that time, he was still a presenter actually on Dutch radio.
Mm-hmm.
He quit that job in August of 2004, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was regularly listening to his show, but I always had the problem that because of the connections in China with the firewall, I wasn't really able to listen to the whole show. Things got cut off for a while, and that was annoying.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I felt there is no real good radio stations in China.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, hey, you know, podcasting, radio, that's maybe a solution to get good radio programs here.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was sort of born of setting up a website, a podcasting website in China, to host foreign radio shows, or not necessarily foreign, but good radio shows.
Right.
That was the very basic idea how Tudo got started.
Mm.
It was a bit in my mind, the idea, for a while, but I wasn't able to program it because I'm not a technical guy.
You got a website, right, for that?
Yes, that's what later on became Tudo.com.
Okay.
What happened is that I met up with another friend of mine, and we discussed the idea, and he liked it very much. And this guy, Gary Wang, or Wang Wei, which is his Chinese name, he at that time was the general manager for BOL.com, which is Bertelsmann Online. His background was computer science,
mm-hmm.
And he did an MBA at INSEAD. So he had the right combination, I guess, to really take this off the ground.
Mm.
And, he liked the idea a lot, and basically we got started in October 2004 on setting up this website,
mm-hmm.
and well, that went let's say better than expected.
Mm.
Although very soon we figured out that purely focusing on podcasting, on audio files, which was then at that time really the podcasting, was an interesting idea, but would not be really big, not right away at least.
Why not?
Because Chinese are more visually attracted than listening to audio.
Uh-huh. I think the general. You know, in general, I would say people are more visually focused than audio, visual focused.
I agree, but I think actually that in Asia it's even more than in outside Asia. If you look at the streets in China at night, all the lights blinking, and you know, if you look at the websites in China, the way they look, it's everything is moving around. Everything is shaking, it's attracting people. People like it.
It's very busy.
Very busy. So that's why we figured out, okay, let's also give the possibility for people to upload videos.
Yeah.
And from the moment we started doing that, we figured, hey, that's probably a good idea because there's a lot more people doing videos than audio stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Tudo.com got started. We launched the site 6 months after we started, on April 15, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So less than 2 years ago.
Okay.
At this point. And it was a big hit from the start, from day one. It went exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
We're at this point, from day one, we've been the biggest in China. Not only because we're the first one, but also because I think we have the best site, the best back end, the easiest way to people to navigate the site.
Yeah.
Easy way to upload files to the site. There's a community behind it. So it went very well. We got about 6 months down the road, we got our first investment in.
Mm-hmm.
And then earlier this year, we got a very big investment, about $8.5 million.
So how do you make a site like that like profitable? Because I don't think it only depends on banners or advertisers,
no.
Right?
It's actually based on the users we currently have, which is at this point over 1.2 million people per day who visit the site. You can even make a lot of money based on banners and advertising, because it's just so many people who go to the website. But there are many other ways actually of doing it. One thing, for example, is working together with brands to make promotions around their brands, focusing on the site. So not just a banner, but doing a real promotion around the whole campaign together with a brand. One thing we're doing, for example, as well, is working with for example, Shanghai Media Group. They were looking for a new actor for one of their soaps, and we did like an online casting, meaning that people can vote for the casting tapes that people send in.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is the value of the data that you have.
Mm.
What we do at Tudou is basically we record everything people do, every click people make, every click somebody makes on the site. We know about.
You're the big brother.
Yeah, well, not a real big
no.
brother, but it's.
I understand.
It's basically we don't use it on an individual level, but you can on an aggregate level, it's very interesting to see what you know. You can see trends. What kind of films do people really watch? What films do they don't like to watch? Which groups are focusing on what? How long do they watch a certain video?
Right.
For advertisers, it's interesting.
Yeah, of course, keeping track records.
It's
is very important.
What do people say about advertisers? About products? So there's a lot of value in there. Finally, the value of the clips we get in. Right now, we get about 10,000 different films per day, which are submitted. And although most of them are, of course, not very interesting, there's about 5% which are quite okay, and about 1% which is really good.
Uh-huh.
And especially this last 1%, that's where the real value is in. And because good films have value. And that's something which is often overlooked. That's something which is important. We have it on our servers, and we can use it for different purposes. We do revenue share with the people who produce it, so they are also more likely to give good material to us because they can earn more money from it. So all these things together basically are the business model behind Tudou. We have some more new ideas coming up, which I cannot say much about at this point, but. There, I mean, once you really have a big audience like we have right now, it's getting much easier to sort of monetize it, to earn money on the site.
Right. I got a question. You were saying like 1% is very good, 5% is good. What are the conditions to judge something good or bad, basically?
The most objective way of judging that is looking at how many people watch it.
Okay.
But not just how often they click on it, but do they watch the whole show or not?
Right.
Because often people click on it, watch for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, say, okay, this is crap, and just go away.
Yeah.
But the fact if they watch the whole show or not, that's a good way of seeing it.
Right.
And even better is, of course, when you see that people start blogging about it and putting a link on other websites. So.
Yeah.
If you look at that where how many people post the link or how many people copy paste the whole thing on their blog or their BBS, that's a way of seeing how good the clip is.
Right.
And of course, there's a subjective way of you know, high quality videos. How well are they made? How well are they cut? How well are they produced?
Right.
That's something we can do ourselves. But it's not necessarily the same clips that are the number one clips on the site.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of a video clip or a short movie which you found very interesting or, I would say, high quality?
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of arty kind of clips that people really want. They want to show how good they are at making films. And really, I'm trying to create a short film with nice effects, black and white, you know.
It's more from a technical point of view about the content.
The content is from a technical point of view, a very high quality, but focused on a very small issue, on a small town that they're filming in, for example. That sort of films. I like it very much. It's really professional, although it's not necessarily the kind of film that a lot of people watch.
Right.
If you look at what a lot of people watch, that's often yeah, the more funny clips or the clips where people play back a song, you know, just karaoke basically, or, you know, having their own lyrics or something.
Right.
And of course, what's very, very famous in China are the spoofs, where people put together things, material from different TV shows and films, and put them together to make a whole new clip. So without filming themselves, putting things together. That's okay. extremely successful.
And popular as well.
Yeah, a lot of people watch it.
Okay. That is tudou.com. Right?
Yeah.
Then you're also running a company, Spill Group Asia.
That's correct, yes.
That's a game portal. I visited the tudou.com and I think Dutch version of your gaming portal.
Yeah.
As part of my homework.
Yeah, right.
Played a racing game in the desert. So maybe you can tell us something more about that.
Sure. Spill Group Asia is a company active in online casual gaming, meaning that we run game portals not only in China but also all over Asia. Mm-hmm. It's part of Spill Group, which is a Dutch holding company. This company runs portals all over the world, basically.
Just why Spill?
It's the name.
Oh,
I mean,
it's the name.
It's just the name.
Okay.
Yeah. So what these portals, they contain free games to play, casual flash-based games.
Yeah.
You just click on them and you wait for a few seconds and you can start playing it. We have thousands of games on the site. They're all for free, and we're also making these games ourselves. We bought a Chinese game developer, Zilong Games. We bought them a couple of months ago, and this was a very good company already.
Mm-hmm.
But what was missing there was basically the marketing. It was difficult for them to sell themselves to foreign clients, basically, and we're helping them to do that.
What was their core business, or what is their core business?
Making casual games.
So a lot of graphic designers working for that company.
Correct.
I guess?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Graphic designers, C++ programmers, Flash programmers.
All right.
Whole combination. And really good products. They really have fantastic products. But what was missing, which is often missing in Chinese companies, the way to market themselves to the outside world. In China, they had a good business, but we felt that what they are doing is very valuable and can be even more valuable when you get foreign clients in. And that's what we're doing right now, and it's going extremely well. We got some very good new clients over the past 2 months, and they're growing like crazy. When we bought them, they had 16 people. They doubled already in size, and likely they're going to be 50, 60 people in a few months down the road. Yeah.
Okay,
so
I've got a friend in graphic design, so I might send them.
Okay.
<email.
laughs> Right.
Yeah. Anyway. What do you think of the future of the Spill Group company, as well as the podcasting company or website?
Well, internet's going to be more and more important. That keeps on growing,
yeah.
Especially in China. I mean, at this point, only 130 million people are only. Well, it's still a big amount of people, but at this point, about 130 million people are online,
mm-hmm.
which means that's only 10% of the population here, so there's still 90% which is not really online yet. So there's a lot of potential. Spill Group is here now with a very good site, game.com.cn. This is a Chinese version of similar sites that we run outside China.
Mm-hmm.
It's a site completely in Chinese with free games. Whatever's going to happen, that site's going to grow. I mean, even if we don't do anything, the more people come online, the more people hear about us, the more people will visit it.
Right.
How
do you make a website like that profitable?
Same as Tudou, basically. It's
okay.
based on ads. Based on right now, it's mainly banner ads. It's there's some video ads in front of games that people play.
Okay.
Although we're looking for new ways, additional ways to really grow the revenue,
mm-hmm.
Which can be done by, for example, using virtual money. People can play against each other. So I race against you, and I say, okay, I can win from you. You say, no, you cannot win, and we both put, you know, one renminbi in, and the winner gets, you know.
I see you marketing that, because,
yeah.
You know, Asian people like to gamble.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, it's not really gambling, actually. It's
no,
it's more skill-based.
Betting.
It's, yeah. So that's, we think, is going to be a major source of revenue in the in the near future. We're developing something for that. Well, if I look at Todo, Todo is just starting, actually. I mean, although we have 1.2 million users per day, or even more at this point, I don't even know the exact number. This is the number from November, which is a few weeks ago already. Todo will get bigger and bigger and bigger. That's also for sure. We are the most used site in this field. There are some other websites, some competitors that are similar in size. But what they do is they also put some soft porn on there, which we do not do. Soft porn, of course, attracts a lot of people. But he also
sex sells
also in China. But yeah, it's not. Let's put it this way: it's not very smart, I think, to do it in China. One day it's gonna work against you. So, you know, we're not too concerned about the other sides at this point. And you know, we have the best backend system. We keep on innovating the site. We get the best clips, in my opinion. People are copying our clips right away when they come on the site. That's always good. You know, if people copy, that shows you're doing the right thing. So, I think Todo is gonna keep on growing as well. It's a great brand, and we cannot do a lot more with it. But yeah, the future will show what that's gonna be.
It's all happening in Shanghai. Shanghai Expat Radio. The Shanghai Expat Podcast.